and welcome to the House Energy and Environment Committee. I'm opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2785. Kat, would you like to give us a brief overview of the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 2785 allows a water right holder to use an expedited application process to apply to the Water Resources Department to appropriate water for a hydroelectric project under an existing water right, if the proposed project qualifies for a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission exemption. The bill establishes the requirements and timelines for the application process and creates a $500 application processing fee. It takes effect January 1st of 2008.
Okay. Thank you, Kat. And committee members, we're going to hear from a diverse group of folks today. There's been a lot of discussion about this bill, so I'm interested to hear from both sides of the issue. And I think we'll start with Katie Fast, Christina McNitt, and Jan Lee, since you guys all signed up together. Okay, and Representative Schaffler's here, hiding in the back, so I didn't see him. Good morning, afternoon.
Hi, Madam Chair. I apologize. I came in for the after the sheet was taken up. I'm Mike Schaffler, State Representative, House District 48, Happy Valley, Southeast Portland. I will leave the details to my friends here, but this is just going to make it easier to get small hydro online, streamline the permit process, save the people that want to do this some money, and this is in line with a lot of the renewable energy stuff we're doing in this building, and I think it's a good bill and should pass.
Thank you.
Anything else today?
Let's see if there's any questions.
I'm trying to get out here before there's questions.
Yeah. Any members? Okay, I think you're off the hook.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Care.
Thanks
Keep
for coming in.
Thank you.
What about? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. It's my pleasure to testify today on House Bill 2785. It was actually introduced by Representative Schaffler at the request of Oregon Farm Bureau and Oregon Water Resources Congress. And our organization see this as an opportunity to better utilize water in the state and also align with a lot of the renewable energy work that this body and others are doing in the state. The intent of the legislation is to streamline the permitting process for small hydro that is being placed and utilized in existing water delivery systems, such as irrigation districts and municipal systems. Interesting enough, this also aligns with the governor's Renewable Energy Action Plan, and I've attached the two pages within the governor's plan that deal with small hydro for your information. Under the current process at Water Resources Department, an applicant wanting to generate electricity from hydro within their own delivery system must apply for an additional water certificate. This is a multi-month process, and it will cost the applicant at a minimum of $1,000. It's a range depending on the amount of energy they're going to be generating. Under House Bill 2785, an applicant with an already certificated water right for surface or groundwater can add hydro to their current delivery system. The proposed project must be exempt from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, meaning it's a smaller project, and Jan Lee is here to expand more on exactly what FERC means. The applicant must also provide the schedule of their annual water use, an estimate of the maximum power potential of the project, and a statement that the amount of water used by the proposed project will not exceed the authorized amount under their existing water right, and also includes provisions that use would be without waste. And it reduces the fee to $500. So in summary, what it does is it actually allows an additional use to the underlining right that they've been using historically, and it just adds hydro onto their original water right. This legislation shortens the public comment period to 30 days, and upon making a final determination that the hydro project does not impair or detriment the public interest, the department will be able to issue a certificate and reduce the application process to a minimum of 45 days. However, if the department does determine that the public interest issues have been identified, then the department shall conduct a more extensive review that's required under the current hydro process of review. After a certificate is issued, it can also have the following constraints put on it that will protect fish, wildlife, and existing users. Those constraints would be requirements by state fish and wildlife for screens and bypass, fish bypass devices. It would also allow or constrain the water to be used limited to periods when the existing underlining right was used. And then it also limits the use of the water to be limited by the rate, duty, and season and other limitations of the existing underlining right. Nita Winkler with the Water Resources Congress and myself worked with a Water Resources Department during the interim on the drafting of the legislation. A few weeks ago, we became aware of some additional concerns from Fish and Wildlife and also some other interest groups. We met last week with those parties, and we're working on some amendments. I believe that the agency's concerns have all been addressed through some agreed-upon amendments, and we're working out some final details with some other interest groups to see if we can get to a negotiated position with the other groups. So I guess my point is there are amendments coming on the bill, and I don't have all those agreed and hammered out at this time. And I'd be happy to answer some questions from there.
Thank you, Katie. I think we'll finish the panel and then take questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm with the Oregon Water Resources Congress. I know you've seen Anita Winkler in front of you many times, and she's explained to you who the Oregon Water Congress is. And I would like to add another angle to that and say that we represent, of all the irrigated agricultural rights in Oregon, approximately half of those are delivered or have some sort of relationship with the irrigation district. So between Ms. Fast and I think we're covering quite a few opportunities here to expedite small hydro projects. With me to my far right is Jan Lee. You know her as a former member of this legislative body, and today she is serving as the executive director or the district manager of the Suwalie Irrigation District in Central Oregon. I'm really pleased to have her here because I think that we can take advantage of the opportunity to ask her a million questions, like what exactly does a FERC exemption do and how does one get one, and all sorts of arcane questions like that she's lived and breathed for most of her career. I think Ms. Fast did a great job of explaining what the bill does and kind of walking through the criteria, so I won't go through that in my written testimony. But I think that I'll just try to place a value judgment here in front of you as a committee. The reason we're here in supporting expedited small hydro projects is because we all realize that water is over-appropriated in Oregon. And to make, quote-unquote, new water, you need to look at conservation projects. And districts are often in a position to work with their patrons and sometimes other municipal entities to pipe some existing canals. And by doing that piping project, in some districts, depending on the hydrology and the evaporation and other factors, you can actually save up to 40% of that water. So that new water then is statutorily directed to be put to use in-stream for fish protection purposes, and depending on how the financing goes, that percentage varies. And the rest of the water can be put to new beneficial use inside an irrigation district. That's the only time that you can, quote-unquote, spread water. But the downside with this win-win situation, these conservation projects, are the expense. It is incredibly expensive for the districts, and that means the farmers, to pay for these conservation projects. And small hydro is a large helper in getting districts to be able to generate some cash flow to pay for those districts over time, or the conservation projects over time. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jan Lee.
Thank you, Christina. Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Jan Lee, General Manager of Swale Irrigation District, which is in Bend, one of seven districts in the Central Oregon Basin. I'm speaking to this subject from my own experience. Our district is putting in a five-mile pipeline, and we have had a number of grants to help assist that financing because we're putting all of the water, 27 CFS, back in the river. But the other thing that really makes our project viable is that we have a 1-megawatt hydropower plant at the end of that system, and that will allow us to also pipe some other portions of the district. Just to give you an example, our project diverts from the river. We have a new fish screen there that we put in 2004, and the water that we'll be diverting for irrigation will simply be reused for hydro. What we're doing is called an inline conduit project, so that all of the generation equipment will actually be within the canal. The water goes through the equipment, out the other side, and onto other irrigators. So we're using the water exactly like we always have, and there's no discharge to the river. That's the kind of projects we're talking about here. I was back at FERC in Washington, D.C. last week talking with their folks about where the exemption process is currently, and we talked about the fact that many people think that if you get an exemption, it means you don't really do a process. Well, that's far from the case. This is just some of the instructions for doing an exemption. And basically, an exemption is a permanent forever process. Once you get one, you hold it in perpetuity. But the other side of that is that fish and wildlife can continue to condition your exemption from licensing in perpetuity. So it's not an easy thing to do. You're always subject to those future requirements for fish and wildlife. So I feel very comfortable with working with the Fish and Wildlife Agency and meeting their requirements, and that it's an ongoing process. You also have to be able to control the land. And in some cases, you have to also do a NEPA process to get one of these exemptions. So when one of us would come to you and try to use this expedited process, we would already have done the FERC application, which requires quite a bit of background work, letters from the various agencies, et cetera, before we ever went into this expedited process.
Jan, could you walk us through, and I see the department is here, and I may bring them up afterwards, but first of all, can you walk the committee through what's the threshold for going through the FERC process or not, and then also how that differs, and then, you know, you have the federal process, and I'm pretty familiar with the FERC relicensing or licensing process, but then you also have at the state level reviews. So maybe you can just walk the committee through what the current requirements are, and then with this bill, how that would change.
Sure. Madam Chair, committee members, when you apply to FERC, as I was saying, you have to have all of your ducks in a row, so to speak, much more than what would be required under this bill. So the way that I would
And just to be clear, that's a separate parallel process.
Yes.
That the applicant would have to go through.
That's correct. And in 1999, we passed some legislation in Oregon that required it to be a parallel process so that the timelines fit together better. So in my case, what I'll be doing, because hopefully my hydro project will come online in April of 2008, is I will be working on my FERC exemption now for the next few weeks, and we'll turn that into FERC at the same time. Depending on what the date of this legislation will be effective, I would give that same information to the Water Resources Department, so it would remain a parallel process. Then under this statute, there would be a 30-day process for review, as I understand, and if there is a presumption met that the public interest has been protected, then altogether I believe it's about a 90-day process for the water right to be provided by the state. If you were to go through a full FERC licensing process, you would be looking at 3 to 4 years probably, and the same at the state level. What is called the HART team, I'm sure Water Resources will talk about this, all the natural resource agencies, meet as a team and consistently work with the applicant until such time as agreements have been made on how the project would proceed. So this would save a very significant amount of time.
And before I take questions on the panel, I just want to clarify what is what at what level are you generating? You know, I'm assuming there's a threshold in order to have the FERC exemption. So can you explain for the committee what that is?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, for reminding me. Under 5 megawatt exemptions are available to folks, and those require a NEPA process generally. There is also a conduit exemption process for small projects, and that one is more expedited and doesn't require a NEPA process. And both of them are for perpetual term.
Okay. And we will bring the department up afterwards to clarify, I think, the process. But now we'll open up for questions, unless you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, once again, at great risk of showing my complete ignorance on these water topics, I'd like to read something to you here from the staff measure summary. It says that this bill allows the water right holder to apply to Water Resources Department for a certificate to appropriate water for hydroelectric purposes within a delivery system under an existing water right. Now, FERC notwithstanding, forget FERC for now, but if we don't have this bill, am I understanding that what you would have to do, for example, what you're trying to do, you have to get a separate water right?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, a number of years ago I worked at Tumalo Irrigation District, and we had an under 5 megawatt project, and we did have to apply for a totally separate water right. It was about a 2.5 year process to secure it, and it had a different date.
We'll ask the department to clarify on that too.
Okay, but I just want to make sure I understand this. So you're getting a separate water right for the same water that you already have a right for. So how does that all add up when we talk about over appropriating a watershed or a basin? I mean, this whole thing just doesn't seems counterintuitive to me. the current system.
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, and that is why we're bringing House Bill 2785 forward, is that current process that people are working under right now, it creates a disincentive for these projects to go forward with a great deal of cost to the applicant and also time in Water Resources Department and other agencies for review and processing, where they could be doing other work instead of kind of evaluating things that have already been evaluated.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, could I add on that? I guess we would just like to emphasize that this bill utilizes the underlying existing water right, and this hydropower is a non-consumptive use. So it's at the same point of diversion. It's in the canals that we're already using. I mean, it's the same water. We have to use the same rate and duty. All of those items are conditioned in the bill. And so that's why we think this is a win-win solution, where we can get some power online quickly and meet with some of the governor's goals and his renewable
energy action plan.
Thank you.
If I may, thank you, Madam Chair. But see, let me go back to my comment about a fully appropriated basin, because if we take the Deschutes, which is fully appropriated, there's no acre inch left to allocate or appropriate. Under the existing rules, if you have to go in and get a separate water right, does that happen? Can you get it if we're fully appropriated?
Representative Burley, it's my understanding that because it's a secondary use of a pre-existing water right, that you can apply for an additional use of the same water, which is a fairly lengthy process, but it can be done even in an over-appropriated stream.
Well, we'll bring the department up and have them clarify that.
Yeah, quick question for the panel. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if you could give the committee some idea of what you think the public purpose criteria the department would use in that 30 days would include. So they'd have a 30-day time frame in which to establish whether or not this project met public purpose. How do you imagine them making that decision?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Cannon, I think the department can expand on your question more, but in discussions that I've had with them, it would be them consulting with Fish and Wildlife to ensure that the fish issues with screening and or a bypass device, that those need to be placed on the permit or not, ensuring that there's no change in the amount of water that's going to be diverted, so that there's no other impacts on existing users within the system. So it's going through that checklist that's in the bill to ensure that the historical use that the water has been under is not going to change, and adding hydro just into the delivery system is not going to impact that change of use.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the panel before we bring the department up? Okay. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll save you for the tough. We'll save the tough questions for Debbie. Okay. Actually, and Roy Elliker, I'll have ODF&W come up as well. Debbie, do you want to come up? And I saw Mike Rainey. I didn't know, Mike, if you were here to testify in this bill as well. Okay.
Doesn't
want to touch it. Yeah. Oh, it's in the Governor's Renewable Energy Plan. Thank you. And whoever, Debbie, you want to start? Or
I'll start. For the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dwight French. I'm the manager of the Water Rights and Adjudication Division at the department. This division includes our two-person hydroelectric staff section. And so I'm kind of the point person on the bill with Davey helping me out. So thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. You've gotten a lot of good detail from the folks who have previously testified. This bill would create an expedited process for obtaining a hydroelectric certificate if certain conditions are met. Those items have been mentioned. The thing I would like to stress is that are just a couple points. First of all, you need to have an existing water rights certificate. So this is an opportunity to make power or add power to an existing use. This process also, you would need to go through the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission exemption process before you could get your certificate from the Water Resources Department. And I can talk about those criteria if you'd like me to. Yeah, there are several safeguards built into the bill already, and ourselves and ODFW and Parks and others are working on those safeguards to try to come up with some amendments that meets everybody's concerns and still works. One of those safeguards is that a screening and bypass facility, as required by ODFW, would need to be a part of the existing diversion. So it either need to be added on, or if one already existed that met ODFW specifics, that would be okay also. The existing process that we have is fairly extensive, so this bill would substantially reduce the processing timelines, the work that my staff do and other staff from the other natural resource agencies, the work that they do would also be reduced also. As Katie mentioned, we met last week and are working on the amendments, and the intent of this bill is good. If we can work out the details, we can have something that will work for the potential applicants and also for the state agencies. So I'll let you add anything if you need to, Roy and Debbie, or we can take questions.
Roy, would you like to state as a reviewing agency?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name again for the record, Roy Elliker, Deputy Director, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We are working closely with Water Resources and the other folks, the proponents of the bill and others. Had a good meeting last week. We feel, at least from our perspective on the fish greening language, we're feeling pretty good about that. And the other amendments were discussed. We'll be part of the team that brings the final bill and the amendments back to this committee, Madam Chair. Just want to assure you of that.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Representative Jensen?
I have a whole bunch of questions, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
If I may.
We've got time, and you have permission to fire away.
What if I may ask, other than the screening interest, what do F&W have to do in this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, the screening is by far the prime concern of the department.
Okay, but is there any other? I mean, can we safely limit ODF&W's purview here to screening?
I guess my only other suggestion in the context of these negotiations, and of course, once again, they are still our negotiations, Representative Jensen, is that in the current hydro process, there in the, I think the statute, section is
543.
In section 543 of the regular hydro process, for which everyone has to go under right now, there's some considerable discussion about mitigation and particularly impact on fisheries, which is a good discussion to have when there are public interests identified. So I guess my only other suggestion from an agency during the discussion on Friday was that if there comes a point where a public interest is identified on some issues as determined by Water Resources, I guess from the Fish and Wildlife Department, if a public interest is identified, then we would prefer that that public interest and whatever mitigation might come out of that issue in terms of fisheries would be best discussed in the context of Section 543, which is the current hydro section. Those are the only two issues, Representative Jensen, that had, like I said, the screening was the prime one. This was a secondary discussion with Water Resources and the others. Whether or not that gets caught up in the final amendments, I don't know, but those really are the only two points that I made during the discussion on Thursday, sir.
Thank you. Follow up? Other questions? It looks to me like this bill is a guaranteed employment for state agency personnel. And you'll excuse me for the comment on this, but we've got a water right already in place for X quantity of water. And there's no provisions in this bill that we'll take X plus Y quantity of water. We're staying with the same amount of water that's ultimately going to be put out on a field or back in a stream, whatever the water right is set up for. Now we have to have separate legislation for someone who is enterprising enough to be able to put this to another use. And I'm not real sure, quite frankly, what other use might be, or whether or if public purpose has any relevance or bearing in it, since the original water right is based on putting it to a beneficial use sort of thing. I'm just kind of stumped at why we have to have to do this. And then in addition to this, I'm seeing in the bill itself an additional $500 fee, simply for the use of the water that you already have a water right and have paid for, lock, stock, and barrel, the water right to do it. And I, Madam Chair, I'm having a lot of difficulty with that. Now, as to whatever types of things we might have in relationship to a Federal Energy Regulation Commission, I think that it's probably okay to try in some way to address those. But, you know, we get a couple hundred of these folks out here putting a megawatt of power back into the system, as we would like to have them doing, through a renewable resource. And then it's going to cost us X number of individuals to go around and check up on and maintain and process the paper, et cetera, type of thing. And I'm stumped with that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. I just, for point of clarification, since we have the statute right in front of us, and ORS Chapter 543, as you mentioned, Dwight. So let me just, I just want to make sure that we're understanding. There already is a process in place. Is that correct? For the Water Resources Department, the agencies to all review, parallel process with FERC to review any new, even if there's an existing water right, they're putting it to a new use, which is for hydropower. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Thanks. So what this bill does is it's an expedited process for small hydro facilities, so they don't have to go through the same extensive process that's already in statute. It's already in law.
That is also correct.
Okay. And what is the fee currently?
Madam Chair, the current fee is a $500 application fee, and then it arises depending on how big your project is. It can be many thousands of dollars, and a $500 permit recording fee on the end. So it's a minimum of $1,000. It can be several thousand dollars.
Depending on the size of the project, I'm
yes.
assuming. Okay. So, Representative Jensen, I think they're already
in
full employment for the agencies, but this
bill. In response to that, Madam Chair, maybe it is appropriate to look at the other application mm-hmm. and, you know, not only amend it, but throw it out.
Well, the bill in front of us amends it for the small projects, but I just wanted to clarify, Representative, that this is already in statute, and I think the intent of this bill is to, for smaller projects, to try to come up with a more expedited process so it doesn't take several years. I see some nodding back there, so I'm thinking that's the intent. Okay, so I just want to be clear for the record that there already is a review in place. Multiple agencies are involved in that hydro review team. I'm assuming it's the same agencies that are would be involved in this, but maybe at a smaller scale than a full-blown review.
Well, Madam Chair, the one of the amendments that we're talking about in our group is that we would have dialogue with ODFNW at least. There would also be public notice. Our public notice is received by other state agencies. They may wish to comment, but the kinds of projects that this bill is intended for, hopefully they wouldn't need to comment because it's a project to take advantage of a use that already exists.
And just for clarification, too, how many projects currently do we have online that would fit in this exemption under the 5 megawatt, and then how many, and maybe this is something for the districts, how many are projected to come online? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, how many applications. You have two FTE that are dealing specifically with mm-hmm. FERC and this type of projects, correct?
Well, Madam Chair, in the next 2-year budget cycle, we estimated that we would only receive about 6 applications under the regular process. We're taking a guess. We don't know what the response might be to a new bill such as this if it were to pass, but we think that number might double. It might even be greater than that. As far as the existing projects that are out there, I don't know that information. I can provide that to you pretty easily.
Okay. And one last clarification, then I'll go to other committee members. Is the rules that we currently have, or what we currently have in statute, that is that a requirement by FERC that there is a parallel state process, or that was a decision that the legislative body made at some point?
I'm not familiar with the background or as to when they kind of set it up for the parallel project. I do know it must have been a while ago. My staff told me that it's been 16 years since we reviewed a major or large project. So it's been a number of years ago, but I'm not sure how long or what the intent of that was.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cannon.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, when a water right is initially granted, it is for a particular purpose, right? And a water right holder is in violation of that water right if they don't use it for a specified purpose. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
Okay, and then a second question. What are some of the questions that a applicant would no longer have to answer under this streamlined process? What are some of the areas that this wouldn't go into?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are the questions are extensive. I'll just read the content areas and not go into the questions, but there's several areas of questions in the regular process. Those questions involve issues of water resources, fish resources, wildlife, plant life, recreation. There's a section called historic, cultural, and archaeological resources, land resources, and land use.
And follow-up, Madam Chair. And under a streamlined permitting process, those questions or those evaluations with respect to those interests that you mentioned would not be considered?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, they would not be considered unless they were raised and it was evident to the department that some issue needed further exploration. So it's possible, I don't want to say that they wouldn't have to be reviewed at all. We would not review them as a matter of course. Somebody would have to bring up some kind of an issue. But the idea is that with an existing water use, those issues really have been taken care of.
Any other questions? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on Representative Cannon's line of questions, I mean, colleagues, those of us that had the benefit of going over to Bend and seeing the fish screen and diversion for Central Oregon Irrigation District, I mean, picture this. All we're suggesting is that same water from that same diversion through the same fish screens going down the same canal, same pipe, is now also going to be spinning a micro-hydro project, which the Governor's Renewable Energy Working Group thinks is a great idea. And what we need to do is incent this, not disincent it. So anything we can do to streamline this, I think, makes a ton of sense. One last, Madam Chair, if I may, follow up with Mr. French. In your written testimony, you've got several bullets here that tell us what the bill does. But twice in your testimony, you said that there's a number of concerns or several concerns, yet you don't articulate what those are. And I'm not going to ask you to do it right now, but I would appreciate a follow-up from your department on what your concerns are on this bill.
Representative Johnson, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, a little bit on questions raised, the concern raised a minute ago. The question was if you're not using the water for the original beneficial use of the permit and using it in some other way, that's a violation, and you indicated yes. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct.
Yeah. If you do have this permitting under the hydro generation that we're talking about here, and you take the water out, and before you go to whatever use the beneficial use was, you run it through the hydro generation. And then when it comes out of the hydro generation, instead of going to the irrigation of a particular piece of land, you use it for some other beneficial use, you're still in violation, right? Nothing in this that would make or change in any way the violation. The violation is whether you're using it for its intended purpose or stated purpose.
That is correct also.
Okay. Thank you. That's no more.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to ask Rebecca Sherman and Dave Muskowitz, please. Jeremiah, yeah, come on up, Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Councilor Meyer.
Okay. Mind if I go first, just to...
Go ahead, Dave.
If I can... I'm sorry to... Pardon me.
That's quite all right.
Vice Chair Burley. For the record, my name is David Moskowitz, here today on behalf of Water Watch. And our testimony is going to be handed out, and I would recommend that you turn to the very last page, because I'd like to start with our conclusion. We did have a meeting, a very good meeting, with the agencies and the proponents of the bill on Thursday. And it was highly productive. A lot of issues were raised, both by staff from Water Watch, and the agencies had some of their own issues and concurred with some of ours. But it was I just want to characterize that meeting as being very productive. The reason I want to start with the end of it is that I think with a little more time, there'd be agreement among the agencies and the proponents of the bill and interested parties such as Water Watch and the Hydropower Reform Coalition and others. The intent has been stated several times. The intent of this legislation is seems to be pretty positive. I think with a little more time, you'd have agreement among all those parties about this. There were a couple of outstanding questions, and one of them does have to do with the priority right. And I think it gets at your question, Representative Jensen, about what is the you're already diverting this water. You've gone through all the issues, and the question, the reason there's concern about a process here is that the underlying rights can change, and by granting this hydropower right without the kind of public review that exists in statute currently, you could end up enforcing against other users for the benefit of this hydro right, which is actually a subsequent right, even though it's tied to the original right. She's shaking her head, so I think I'm not being clear, so I'll start over on that point.
I think you're being clear enough. I just respectfully disagree.
Okay. Well, that is Water Watch, perhaps the major concern that Water Watch has, and our concerns on this bill are listed, and the way our testimony is drafted is if we're commenting on the existing bill, and so we have issues with the existing bill, and they're outlined in detail in our testimony. However, we had reached some very strong agreement with the proponents of the bill and the agencies, and so we're hopeful that we can all end up supporting a piece of legislation if it reflects some of those changes. But I just wanted to highlight that our key issue and the reason that we are applying some scrutiny, which I think seems to mystify some people, is that this is a new use tied to an underlying right. And if the underlying right changes, this hydro right, which will not go through, under this bill, will not go through all the processes that you need to go through to get a water right, it would have that earlier priority date. So you have a user whose original use changes. And that's why you can't allow a secondary right without going through the strong public interest review. And that's the main gist of our concerns with this bill. We think that that's going to be resolved by the group that's working on this bill. Okay. I'm happy to take any questions about our testimony or those comments. And
why don't we hear from the whole panel, and then we'll take questions. Thank you.
Shall I go next?
Yeah.
Great. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, I'm Rebecca Sherman. I work for the Hydropower Reform Coalition. It's a coalition of conservation groups and recreation groups that have worked on the hydropower licensing process throughout the country. We've been around since 92. In Oregon, I represent 25 organizations alone. Obviously, there's a lot of licensing work here in Oregon. So when I come to speak to you today, I realized that Ms. McGinnis already provided an email that I'd sent to Madam Chair earlier this week, and I do want to agree with what Dave just said, that since that time, since that earlier statement of serious concern about this bill, the parties have come together and they've found common ground on most of these issues. So again, my testimony addresses sort of what our concerns are with the bill as it's currently drafted. So I know you guys are reading this, but it's also helpful so that you know when you see the amendments come in what's actually getting to the core issues and what's not. So in my testimony, I highlighted what I think, and it sounds like there are other folks in this room that have gone through the ORS 543 process, and they've come out the other side successfully. They've produced fish screens that are doing the job. They're not injuring fish. It's a passive screen. They're getting the power they need, and they're also getting the money that they need out of that power, but they're protecting resources, and I think that's what ORS 543 is designed to do. It's a strong standard. It's a landmark standard, and we can't support doing away completely with 543. It's there for a reason. So I understand that one of the amendments that's on the board is to allow 543 to kick in if there are serious concerns, and I think we can live with that. The other thing that I wanted to raise to the committee here is exemptions and what they are. And in my testimony, I list exactly what an exemption can be, how many are in Oregon. You know, all of these occurred 20 years ago. So, you know, we have 18 exemptions in Oregon, and the last one was issued in 86. So we haven't seen an exemption for a long time. We haven't really gone through that process recently. So we are kind of doing a little bit of guesswork. But I'll tell you, in my experience with exemptions nationwide, they're difficult to reopen. They're difficult to deal with changing circumstances because they're issued in perpetuity. So I just want to make sure that we're, this committee, although this exemption class is considered to be have lower impact, you're still careful and thoughtful about amending the rules or wholly exempting ORS 543. So with that in mind, thank you.
Thank you. Jeremiah?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeremiah Bauman. I'm an environmental advocate for the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. My testimony will be very brief, not only because I tend to talk fast, but because I know very little about water law or FERC processing of hydro facilities. I just want to comment specifically from the perspective of an organization that works both on environmental concerns related to wildlife and conservation, but also on promoting renewable energy. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, as I think the Governor's Renewable Energy Action Plan reflects, that small hydro does offer a good opportunity for Oregon, but only the general opportunity that is provided by renewable energy in terms of taking control of our state's energy future, reducing our impact on other far worse forms of energy, such as coal, fired generation, and stabilizing electric rates for consumers. But I think that the opportunity of small hydro today offers also an opportunity not only for rural communities to take control of their energy future, whether it's farmers and their irrigation canals or irrigation districts or cities in their drinking water or wastewater systems, but there's also an opportunity, I think, for us to kind of bridge the gap that has long time been there around hydropower because of some of the mistakes we've made in the past in terms of not adequately dealing with some of the environmental concerns before the hydropower facilities are built. I think small hydro is an opportunity to show that we can do hydropower in a way that's good for the environment and gets us the same energy benefits that we get from all hydropower. As I think you've already heard today, as the draft is currently proposed, there are still environmental concerns, but I have full confidence that those will be addressed among all the parties that are interested in this bill, and we'll be able to come up with a bill that will both get Oregon in a position to take advantage of those opportunities for good small hydro projects and protect our river ecosystems at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? No. Okay. Thank you very much. And last we have up, last but not least, the League of Oregon Cities, Willie Tiffany. And is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill today that did not sign up? Okay. Welcome, Willie.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities. Well, I'm proud to represent, but today I also get to represent the special districts. Amanda Rich could not be here and asked me to lodge her support as well. For House Bill 2785, we have many of the same concerns, very supportive of this bill. As the sponsors, cities, however, and districts do have even advanced energy costs because not only are we pumping water, but we're treating water, and many of those treatment processes are very, very energy intensive. So the ability to utilize some of these small hydro systems could be very, very valuable. In fact, in Representative Burley's district, a number of the cities right now are trying to put a package together to do just that. Also in Southern Oregon, there are a number of communities that are looking at this option as well. With that, I would just say we support the bill. I would also, Madam Chair, as this bill is related directly to certificates, we would hope possibly in the future, not in this session, but if this bill was passed, that the legislature may look at extending
this to municipal permits as well, as we don't operate or utilize certificates in the way other water users do. Typically, municipalities use uncertificated permits to provide drinking water to residents. But with that, I look forward to working with the sponsors and urge this committee to support the amended bill when the amendments come out. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Representative Cannon, you look like...
Well, I have a question, but it's not for Willie. So.
It's not for you.
I'm still puzzling over some earlier testimony.
So, Willie, have you been at the table with the other folks that have raised concerns?
I have not, Madam Chair, and that's not for any fault of the sponsors of the bill, but for our fault. Our association did not take a position on this bill until last Friday.
Okay.
So we're happy to be here today supporting and look forward to working with that group as they move forward.
Okay. Thank you. Did you want me to pull the department back up, Representative Cannon? This is a question that would you would want to ask the department. I'm happy to do that. We've got a few minutes. We're going to get to the next bill.
Madam Chair, I will hang on to my questions and over the course of the days to come sort through this.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you. Well, committee members, you've heard a lot of different viewpoints. There are a group of folks that are working together on this, and what I'd like to ask is that that group continue to work and bring forward the amendments, and hopefully we can come to some resolution on some of the issues that we've heard raised here today. So we will, I guess, stay tuned and see what that working group, informal working group, comes up with. And if you could stay in touch with the committee administrator, I'd appreciate that. So with that, we will close the hearing on House Bill 2785. And we will open up a public hearing on H.R. 1, which declares the development of hydrogen-based economy in Oregon as a high priority. Kat, could you give us an overview of the bill first, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House Resolution 1 recommends that hydrogen be a top priority of any current or future renewable energy initiatives by the state of Oregon and encourages creative partnerships with local government, venture capitalists, and organizations such as the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance.
Okay, thank you. And we have Representative Gilliam here today who would like to testify on the bill. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee who stayed with us.
I was going to say, I don't know what happened. I guess hydrogen was a little too much for them to handle after hydropower. So
it happens in a lot of rooms that I go to. For the record, my name is Vic Gilliam. I'm a representative from District 18, Silverton, Mount Angel, and Malala. And I, too, have been sitting in hearings after lunch, and so I want you to know help is on the way because this is an exciting resolution. I was listening to insurance rate testimony. But the reason I think this is exciting is because it gives us a chance to highlight something that has enormous, if not unlimited, potential for our state. So I first want to thank the chair for this opportunity, but also for signing on to this resolution. And I want to thank all of you for your attention and the issues that you're considering when it comes to alternative and renewable sources of energy, which this resolution highlights. I'm going to be very brief, because while I may be a cheerleader for the hydrogen area, I'm not an expert. And we have some folks in the room that can tell the story a lot better than I can. But I did want to make sure that you knew how important I thought this was and that it actually offers us an opportunity to work together on something that makes sense, no matter if Republican or Democrat. But it's a we kind of a resolution. And to me, work around hydrogen and creating a hydrogen economy in Oregon is actually a way to change the energy paradigm. And I'm not here to have this be a us versus them or a referendum on foreign policy or endless rhetoric on dependence on foreign oil, but actually talk about something specific that could make so much sense for Oregon and our strategic place in our utilizing our resources to actually change the way, as I said, the energy paradigm exists. So with that, I just want to bring up folks in the room that are far better at telling the story, and I'm glad that I think we have representatives from the private industry. If you've got a list there, I've been
yes,
in the other room.
Yes, we do.
And I'm very pleased that Oregon's director of Department of Energy is here as well. But the first person, if I might, pass the microphone to is Jack Robertson. Is that all right with you, Madam Chair?
Sure, that's fine.
And the reason I do that is because I've known Jack for over 30 years. Jack and I worked together in Senator Hatfield's office in Washington. He's joining me here now at the desk. And Jack, many of you know I was plunged into this process as an appointment. I'm serving the term for Max Sumner, who became ill from District 18. So far before I knew I was going to be in the legislature, this gentleman to my right started telling me about the tremendous potential hydrogen has. And he's sort of been my hydrogen professor. And now, as we put together this resolution, he's been my hydrogen mentor. And I'm pleased that he's here. Jack, after leaving Senator Hatfield's staff as a policy advisor and press secretary, joined Bonneville Power and was there for about 16 years, serving both as a deputy administrator and the acting administrator at times. And since retiring from Bonneville, and although Jack and I have known each other, I think you can see plainly that he's quite a bit older than I am, and I felt it was important to get him in here as soon as we possibly could. But Jack, among other things, has co-founded the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance, which you see mentioned in the resolution. And in that capacity, he has become somewhat of a hydrogen guru in our state, and I think you'll enjoy his testimony and a chance to get to know a little bit about him and what he has to offer. So I'm hoping that in addition to his testimony, when I get stopped here, I will, you can have a chance to ask him some questions. But on a personal note, I would tell you that in addition to Jack's energy and natural resources background, he also has a lovely wife, Deborah, and with her has written several screenplays, some which have been optioned in Hollywood. And so, Madam Chair, it's my hope that we can sell Jack on maybe, I don't know, resolution number one, the movie, or something like that. And Jack
and
has...
Don't tell me you would be the starring role.
I would be a supporting role to you. And Jack has one son, Nick, who's a junior at Stanford University. He's a longtime Oregonian with lots of roots here in the state, and I think you'll enjoy that. I thank you for this chance to introduce Jack to the committee and to testify.
Thank you, Representative, and I hope you're not paid extra as this press agent on the side. So, thank you.
I can assure you. I think there may be a sandwich in this I'm going to have to pay out before it's over. But thank you very much, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for staying around to talk about hydrogen. I have a...
And for the record, can you please state your name?
I can.
Even though you've already been very graciously introduced by Representative here.
My name is Jack Robertson, and I'm the chairman of the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I have a kind of extensive testimony that I'm going to ask be placed in the record if I could. And I know how time is urgent for folks, and what I want to do is just take about 5 or 10 minutes, if I could, to just outline why I think this is so crucially important and why it's suddenly become extremely interesting as a practical potential energy resource for particularly Oregon and the Northwest. And let me just start. So if that's okay with you, Madam Chair, I'll submit it to the record. And let me just start by a little story. I was reading a book the other night about the greatest statue that has ever been built in world history. The statue was built on the island of Rhodes 2,300 years ago, and it was known as the Colossus of Rhodes. Now, some of you may have remember this because it is one of the ancient seven wonders of the world. It was the height of the Statue of Liberty. It was built for its time. It actually inspired the Statue of Liberty. It held a torch of freedom above the Mediterranean world, and it literally, its legs went across the entrance to the harbor, the small harbor at Rhodes, welcoming ships from everywhere in the Mediterranean world. It had been built 50 years, an unbelievable engineering achievement for its time, and a massive earthquake on Rhodes snapped it off at its knees and destroyed it. Pieces of it fell to the ground, laid there for 800 years. Finally, an Arab force conquered Rhodes, and Arab salesmen came in, took the pieces of the Colossus of Rhodes away on 900 camels to Edessa, Turkey, and the greatest statue in the history of the world kind of disappeared into the dust of history. Now today, the reason I mention this is today, the entire modern world, the world economy, rests on two $10 trillion energy infrastructures. One is the electric power grids of the world, and the other is the oil-based food and transportation segment of the world. There is enormous stress on the power grid system. It is, as I say, a $10 trillion system. It's going to grow to 30,000 billion kilowatt hours by the year 2030. And it is the backbone of civilization, modern civilization. It is hugely important to everything. It's the world's biggest machine running at the speed of light. The other large pillar, like the Colossus of Rhodes, that's holding up the world's energy system is the oil-based infrastructure, and you're all well familiar with the dangers and exposures that has to attack. Saudi Arabian oil fields, which are the swing oil fields of the world, are risked because 90% of their oil comes out of five fields. Over half of the world's oil, or the Saudi Arabian oil, is processed in a single facility in the Gulf of Bahrain. There is enormous potential for disruption. The reason I mention these things, these flexibles, is because the hydrogen potential in the Northwest can turn this region into the Saudi Arabia of hydrogen energy. Now, how is that possible? Most of you have walked by the Columbia River and the Columbia River Gorge. If you stand in front of the Columbia River and you count for a single second, 250,000 cubic feet of water go by you on an average spring day. There are 3 kilograms of hydrogen in every cubic foot of water. That means that in 3.5 minutes of the Columbia River's flow, in 3.5 minutes, there's enough hydrogen energy in that water to power every one of the 127 million cars in America for a single day, an average day of driving. There is so much energy in the flow of the Columbia River that you can take the entire remaining oil reserves of Saudi Arabia, 260 billion barrels, equivalent to 5 trillion gallons of gasoline. And the equivalent of 5 trillion gallons of gasoline in energy in the form of the hydrogen in the flow of the Columbia River is achieved in 67 days of Columbia River flow. And that's achieved every single 67 days for the rest of time. I say this because there is an enormous potential to shift the fundamental exposure the nation and the world has to these huge energy systems, and hydrogen can become the crucial element to do that. And we in the Northwest, particularly in Oregon and Washington State, but elsewhere, have this enormous potential resource that's available to us. The key is, how do we get the hydrogen out of the water? Because it takes energy to crack water and to achieve the result. If you can do that, if you can cheaply achieve the breaking out of hydrogen energy from the water and then reshape it, you have unlocked a key to the energy potential in the region and in the state that can put us at the center of a new world industry. So I helped found the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance because what we want to do is practically begin to prove how this will work. We've suggested in the testimony a hydrogen strategy which takes the low-cost, non-firm, renewable energy from around the Northwest, particularly from the hydro system, but also from wind power, absorbs that, cracks it, cracks water at sources we're calling hydrogen hubs, stores it in a hydrogen-rich liquid called ammonia, familiar to us all, but which has tremendous energy density. But when that ammonia is put through new engines and new technology that is now being built, is on the verge of being built, and we're dealing with those manufacturers now, it can create power with zero pollution and with great energy density. Not quite as great as carbon-based fuels, but very close. And you can put, because there's no carbon and no pollution with respect to burning this ammonia liquid through these new machines, you essentially reshape the power of the Columbia River. You crack the hydrogen out of the water. You store it in a dense liquid at room temperatures or near room temperatures, and you run it through these new generators and create power and put it precisely where you want it. You put these hydrogen hubs, which will accomplish this, in the middle of urban areas where the density of population growth and electric growth is the greatest, and you meet precisely the needs of utilities and the electric power grid with non-polluting energy at the source of the use of the energy. This saves hundreds of millions of dollars in transmission system costs, in distribution costs, in substations, in not-in-my-backyard arguments about how we connect this up, because I can tell you, having run Bonneville with its 15,000 miles of transmission lines across four states and two countries, it is extremely complicated to be able to meet the energy needs of the region with distant carbon-based energy east of the mountains and put that through large-scale transmission systems that has to help take out large segments of the Cascade Range in order to get it to urban areas. This is extremely expensive, and frankly, in the future, it's going to be very difficult to get it done. So I'm going to close by saying the potential we have here for actually creating practical, usable, renewable hydrogen energy precisely where it's needed is extremely interesting. It is not pie in the sky. It is something that can be practical and brought down to earth and achieved, I think, on a strong bipartisan basis, as Rep. Gilliam has indicated. So I want to stop and tell you I'm extremely excited about this. I know resolutions. We dealt with them a lot in the Senate, and this is extremely important to usher in a new potential era for energy. There's tremendous amounts to do, and the job now is to make sure the public is aware of the potential. So thank you very much for your role in helping do that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you've got.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. Appreciate you coming here today. I do have one quick question, and then we'll see if my colleagues have any questions. We toured one hydrogen cell company, Idatech, when we were in Central Oregon. That's in Representative Burley's district. And we actually saw the manufacturing process there, and they were developing the cells. Question I have is, what is your sense on the national level before these fuel cells on a larger scale are commercially viable? Because right now the costs have been somewhat prohibitive, and I think it would be interesting to know how many years out, and then what kind of research and development dollars are we talking about the national level to make that possible?
Actually, when I was at Bonneville, I was heavily involved in getting the first contract between Bonneville and Idatech about their fuel cells. So the answer, honestly, about fuel cells is what's most interesting right now is to me is generating, using hydrogen to generate power for the power grid, not actually for putting it into cars. I think cars will come second. The power grid will create these hydrogen hubs, in our view, which will then become essentially the fueling stations for future transportation based on hydrogen. The fuel cell is particularly interesting as a potential for power generation in cars. It's also very, very good, expensive, but very good for power backup generation for substations and so on the electric power grid. So it has very important specific niche markets right now. What's exciting about backing up from fuel cells, what's exciting about these new power generators that run on hydrogen that are being developed is their larger scale. They're very, very efficient. They're almost as efficient as fuel cells, but they're much larger in scale so that they can deal with the power grid requirements on a much better per kilowatt hour cost basis. So the answer is fuel cells are very important. There's a lot of Hewlett and Packards and a lot of garages and small companies around this region dealing with technology and hydrogen in this stage of it. But we want to be able to put these hydrogen hubs in place to be able to bring in these new technologies and demonstrate them against one another, compete them against one another to see which ones turn out to be the most efficient.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? No? All right. Thank you very much
thank
for
very
coming
much.
Here today. Thank
Appreciate
you, Representative, it. For leaving your exciting insurance hearing. And
my pleasure entirely.
Real quickly, Mr. Robertson.
Oh, yeah. Robertson.
Sorry. Robertson, you had mentioned earlier that you were going to submit written testimony.
Yes.
Do we have that yet?
I've got it right here.
You can give it to the committee assistant, and he'll make sure and get that. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Okay, next I'd like to call up Mr. Graney with the Department of Energy.
Thought you'd get away.
He's been so patient sitting here through all the hydro discussions.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Record Mike Graney, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. We also support HR 1. Hydrogen, as you've heard, does have great potential, many applications. You saw some in your visit to Bend a week ago at the fuel cell demonstrations. Where hydrogen is being used in fuel cells, both for heat and light, and also in cars. It also has great potential for fuel in cars and for electricity generation, as Jack Robertson discussed. Hydrogen's not the only solution, but it can be a key part of the solution, just as biofuels is important in the transportation side. And from our Renewable Energy Action Plan, we looked at a series of different technologies, and hydrogen's an important part of that. It would benefit also from the incentives that you passed earlier this year in House Bills 2211 and 12 on renewable energy. Let me just mention that the governor spoke last summer at the hydrogen conference that was held in Portland, committed then to directing our agency to develop a hydrogen strategy for the state. It's an important effort that we're very enthusiastic about, and we're working closely with the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance on that. So we see a lot of potential for hydrogen to play a key role in reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, especially on petroleum. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Greeny? I have a quick question, Mike, as far as other countries. I mean, where is the United States in regards to developing, forwarding their hydrogen sources versus other states, or other countries, I should say?
Madam Chair, I might better defer to Jack on this, but my understanding is there has not been a lot of development on hydrogen at all. It's one of the technologies that has a lot of potential. I think it's comparable to wave energy, where the interest is high and the technology is changing and the costs are coming down. And it certainly is worth, on the national level, us devoting resources to hydrogen and wave and other renewable energy that's been going, I think, too much disproportionately to fossil fuel and nuclear research.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mike? Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. And last we have Mr. Davis with the Hydrogen Fuel Cell Corporation. And thank you for coming here today, gentlemen. If you can just make sure and state your name for the record, please.
Sure. My name is James Davis with Hydra Fuel Cell Corporation.
I'm James Tweet, CEO of Hydra Fuel Cell Corporation.
And we are here to back HR 1 also. Our main purpose and goal here within the state of Oregon, and actually nationally, is to develop fuel cell technology. There are definitely probably 40, 50 companies throughout the United States and some of the other areas, other countries that are already doing this technology. But we feel that there's definitely going to be a great, great need for this technology. The automotive industry, as we all know, are already leaning this direction. We feel that we need to help take care of the environmental issues already that are coming to pass. We feel that with our direction and other companies also too, that we really focus on how can we manufacture economical fuel cell technologies to where it can get to the actual market to be used. We feel that's crucial. So in our R&D and our research and development, we are mainly focused on how can we mass produce fuel cell technology. And it really kind of comes into play with what Jack has also been working on with his ammonia technology, because we also feel that ammonia is very crucial and very critical, because we were doing co-research, not knowing that at the same time that Jack was actually looking at the same type of solutions. But we've come to the same conclusion that ammonia makes sense as a excellent storage vehicle. There are millions and millions, if not billions, of dollars being spent on hydrogen storage. So we have looked at it and we researched it, and we believe that that is absolutely one of the crucial things that we have to have. Within our organization, we are primarily looking at stationary application and not automotive or transportation application with our fuel cell technology. We are also looking to work with the state to develop fuel cell technology for backup power systems, for what's called cogeneration. And for those that are not aware of that, cogeneration basically means that anywhere that we would drop fuel cell technology, meaning put a fuel cell, at that point we could do cogeneration of electricity. By using such technologies allows us to reduce CO from off of the grid from anywhere from 20% to 50%, in some cases 70%. So it makes a lot of sense for us to continue to look at the technology, figure out how we can make it most effective, and be able to basically allow our next generations to basically be able to live in a clean and clean environment, as far as that goes. Do you have anything you want to add?
I would just add that...
Can you just state your name again for the folks that are...
James ready? Tweed, I'm the CEO of Hydrofuel Cells. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I just wanted to add that you can tell how excited Jack was about what's happening with the hydrogen industry. A number of other states are getting on the bandwagon, so to speak, because the days of petroleum-based economy and using the oil up is coming to an end, and in the future you're going to see power generated by wind, solar, and hydrogen. That's where it's going, and it's a matter of time before that transition is made. And the technology that we are using and the idea is to get the cost down. We are piggybacking on the computer industry to get our costs down. I won't go into our technology, but that's our goal. The other states that are jumping on the bandwagon called the hydrogen economy, I think there's about 18 of them now. In fact, a couple of states are projecting that even that's where they're going for economic development to create jobs in their state. So we encourage you to pass this bill on, and we're all for it 100%.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming today. We appreciate it. Are there any questions? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, forgive me if I missed you stating this earlier, but are you an Oregon-based company? Are you
located? Yes, we're located in Beaverton.
In Beaverton?
Mm-hmm. We currently have about 8 or 10 engineers working on the project, and we are currently scheduled for certification sometime in June. And we'll have a product. Our target market is the 500 watt to 5 kilowatt range at the moment.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So two questions, actually, then, based on what you just said. Which certification? And so the second question is the fuel cell that you're working on developing is the power generation type, not the backup or the...
We're working on a backup power generation system, and the certification we're going to ask for and receive is called CSA, which covers the same as UL. It's mostly in terms of safety certification, so that somebody can take this fuel cell and be assured that it's going to run fine. And
We were at IDATEC a week and a half ago, and
absolutely,
they were under the, it's not WISPA, it's,
well, they're certified under the Western States Contracting Alliance, but they're also and Director Graney would probably have to answer this, but there's another certification. I think it's an ANSI certification, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Well, CSA certification covers the UL, it all covers the United States and Canada.
Well, if I may, Madam Chair, the reason, sure, gentlemen, the reason I'm asking these questions is because we have another bill that the Chair and I co-sponsored to authorize up to $980,000 in lottery-backed bonds to help incent the deployment of fuel cells in the state of Oregon so that we can get the technology out there and people can get more familiar with it. And we had to make some amendments to deal with some certification issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want it to be all-inclusive for Oregon companies, and
right,
this certification you just mentioned is a new one that we hadn't heard
right
of.
Right. Well, the director is
here.
Well,
I can provide you the information to...
Yeah. Actually, if you could provide it to the director,
Director,
I think that
Graney,
would be...
You might want to talk to him about that.
Right.
Sure.
Mind, please.
That would be helpful. So
yeah, and if you have money available, we'd be glad to come and visit.
I'm sure. Yeah. It's funny how that happens around here. So any other questions for this panel?
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
While they're here, I just wonder if there are any other initiatives that this legislature is considering taking with respect to renewable power that you want to say something about, or anything that the state ought to do in order to help this further incent the development.
Well,
of this industry.
I believe it's an investment tax credit for a fuel cell. If you acquire a fuel cell, and if someone acquires a fuel cell for a home, that the state or somebody will actually pay part of the cost. And eventually, I think you will see that in our estimation, it's going to take about an 8-kilowatt fuel cell to run a home. And at the moment, you could actually hook a fuel cell up to a home and also hook it up to the grid. And if it was, say, a 5-kilowatt fuel cell, you could use the first 5 kilowatts off the fuel cell, and if you needed more than that, you could go to the grid and then back off of the grid, and if you had excess power, you could sell it to the grid. And we don't have that system at the moment, but we're working on something like that, and
that's
in
development.
I think eventually you will see things like that, and you will see exactly what Jack was talking about, and not having to have this huge infrastructure system that requires huge amounts of maintenance.
Absolutely. And another nice thing, if I may,
yeah,
it also takes away vulnerability, too. So if you're in an area that has a weak grid, if you're at the end of the road, let's say, for example, things of that nature, and you know that you have plenty of standby power, it makes life a lot simpler and easier to use, or to live, excuse me, as far as that goes. And if we were ever to go into a national disaster, a state of war in this particular area, by having much more smaller distribution systems, it just allows us to stand up more strongly. Stronger and not be volatile, that's the wrong word I was looking for.
Vulnerable.
Thank you. Yes, vulnerable to let's say enemy attack per se, as far as that goes.
But you have to have the hydrogen, and you have to crack it out of either water or natural gas or a number of other sources. But hydrogen is the most abundant element there is in the world.
Thank you. Any other questions? Good question, Representative Cannon.
Thanks.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming today. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill before we close the public hearing? Okay. Well, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Resolution 1, and I'm actually going to open up a work session on House Resolution 1, and I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Resolution 1 be adopted.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. Representative Cannon moves that House Resolution 1 be adopted. Is there any discussion? Okay. Well, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Absent.
Representative Fire?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Excused.
Chair Heathover.
Aye. Motion having received the required majority is declared passed, and I think that there might be somebody in the audience that would like to carry this. Representative Gilling, would you like to carry House Resolution 1 to the House floor? Okay. So we will assign the carrier. It's Representative Gilliam. And with that, we will close the work session on House Resolution 1, and we are done for the day. So I'll close the House Energy and Environment Committee, and we'll see you all on Wednesday.
Thank you.